we're learning Maseches Menachos, which discusses the various types of Menachos that were brought in the Beis HaMikdash. Menachos meaning a flour offering that involves flour, dough, often baked, and sometimes not. There are a number of different types of flour offerings, and sometimes you really get a picture of how it was done and what was done, and understand the various Gemaras when you actually try doing it. So, we'll see how far we could get into this, as far as the demonstration. Let's start with first defining the mincha. The mincha, as I said, is a flour offering. Altogether, we'll see there are 12 different types of flour offerings. A number of these could be divided into four broad categories, let's say. There's the ones that are chovas ha-karban, the ones that are brought together with a karban. When certain karbanos are brought, wine is brought along with them, and a mincha offering with flour and oil is brought to accompany them. One cannot bring the karban without also bringing the mincha offering that goes along with it. That's one type. These are called minchas nesachim. Then, a second type is the chovas atzibor. Certain menachos that the Torah tells us, the tzibor, Klal Yisrael must bring. It's not brought by an individual, but by the group. All of Klal Yisrael brings these offerings. On certain times, these are the minchas haomer, and the shtei alechem, and the lechem aponim. Minchas haomer, which is brought on the second day of Pesach, after which it is permitted to eat from the new tavua, the new produce, new grains that grew over the year. Before that offering, it is forbidden to eat from the new grains, even in one's house. The shtei alechem is a karban that consists of two loaves, which are brought on shvuos. These are brought together with the kvasim, kivtzei atzeres, the sheep offerings, and after bringing those two loaves, it is permitted to bring the new grain into the mikdash for the menachos that are being brought during the year. Until that time, it is permitted to eat from the new grain, but not to bring it in the mikdash. Also, after the shtei lechem are offered, it is permitted to bikurim, the first of fruits, to the mikdash. The third chovas atzibor, the third carbon which is brought by the tzibor, is the lechem aponim, the third mincha. The mincha of lechem aponim is a mincha offering which is replaced every week. It's called the showbread, and the table of the showbread, the shulchan, which is inside of the heichal, is where the mincha of lechem aponim is placed on Shabbos, and it is removed. The old one is removed, a new one is placed there to replace it immediately, such that the shulchan is always full with bread, 12 loaves of bread. Okay, those are the public offerings. The private offerings are three different types of private offerings that could be brought for a carbon mincha. There's the minchas chote, minchas sote, minchas chavisin. We'll learn more about this as we go on. Minchas chote is, if a person is very poor and he doesn't have the money to purchase an animal to atone for a sin, in certain sins the Torah says that it is permissible for him to bring simply a mincha meaning a small flour offering in place of bringing a carbon behema, an animal. This is a significant savings, and it's only allowed for a person that really has no money to his name and can't afford even bird offerings. There's three sins for which this is brought: the Shavuos Ha'edus, Shavuos HaPikodon, and the Shavuos Bitomin, Shavuos Ha'edus, and the Tumas Mikdash V'Kadosh, of certain specific sins for which a carbon mincha v'chote can be brought, a sinner's mincha offering. And finally, the minchas sota, which is for a woman who is suspected of committing adultery, which she is given to eat, where she is given water to drink, to test her to see whether she really committed adultery or not. The Torah promises that if she committed adultery, We're going to see the effects of it immediately as soon as she drinks the water. However, the water will only test her if the Karban Mincha, the Mincha Sota, is offered along with the water. Some say before she drinks the water, some say after she drinks the water. But only when you have both the water and the Mincha of the Sota will the water test her. And the Minchas Chavisin is a special Mincha which the Kohen Gadol brings. The Kohen Gadol brings this Mincha offering twice a day, in halves. Half of it in the morning, half of it in the evening. I think we'll see a little bit more about this soon. And then there are the private voluntary offerings, not the obligatory offerings of the private person, which are the three we mentioned, but the voluntary offerings of a private person, which are divided into five categories, five different types. There's the Minchas Solas, which is flower offering, the Minchas Ma'afet Tanor, which comes in two shades, two types, Minchas Chalas and Rekikin, baked in an oven, and then you have the Minchas Machlas and Marcheshes, which are baked in specific dishes. Okay, this is just an introduction to show that there are various types of Menachas. The subject of understanding the Menachas is more difficult, perhaps, than even understanding the different animal sacrifices that were offered in the Mikdash. As the Sefer Mevu'e HaKachim, who worked very hard on understanding the exact process by which the Mincha offering was offered, and he writes that this is for a number of reasons. First of all, there's so little written about how to bring the Menachas. The Torah just says you can bring it in this type of vessel, in that type of vessel, and it says a sinner brings a Mincha offering. It doesn't really describe very much about it, and yet there are a lot of specific laws that we have to derive from the Gemara, and we have to sum up an entire Masechta in order to find out how to offer a single Mincha offering. And then you have the fact that, right, by the animal offerings, much is said in the Torah about them, and it's much more clear. The Mincha offerings are much less clear. Second of all, there are many minor differences between the various Mincha offerings, and it's not at all clear what the reason or the logic behind them is. In general, many times we'll have to say, this is what's called Kizeras HaKosav, the Torah decreed, this is what we do, so this is what we do. However, there are so many minor differences that it's very complicated to get a clear picture of the various Mincha offerings. Each of them are very different from the others. Sometimes very different, sometimes there are minor differences, but each of them are different from the others. There are a number of differences between the Menachas which our rabbis do explain. For example, the Mincha Sota, the offering that's brought by the suspected adulteress, the Mincha Sota is very different from the other Mincha offerings, and Chazal give a reason for this. The Mishnah in Sota Yudala tells us, all the other Mincha offerings are brought from flour. This is brought from barley. I'm sorry, the other Mincha offerings are brought from wheat flour. This is brought from barley flour. And not only that, but the Minchas HaOmer, which is brought from barley flour, is brought from finely sifted barley flour. The Minchas Sota is brought from barley, and it is not sifted. So it's very rough barley. The Mishnah tells us in Sota Yudalet, the reason for this is, he asked the Maisa Behema, and therefore Karbana Michael Behema, meaning she was acting like an animal, and therefore her Karban is brought in a way that shows that this is something fit for an animal. Many differences between the Mincha Sota and the other Menachos are explained by this simple statement. The reason it's brought from barley, as the Mishnah says, and from coarse barley, is for this reason. This is something that animals eat. It's not really human food. Similarly, it's brought without oil, without levona. It's brought very basic. It's not baked first. And many of the differences between this and the other Menachos are explained by this fact that it's made to be a no-frills mincha, a mincha that's made for a person that acted like an animal. Another interesting mincha is the mincha of Chavisin. The mincha of Chavisin is a half mincha. What does that mean? All other Menachos that are brought from at least one Isaron of flour. One Isaron of flour. An Isaron of flour is a certain measure of flour. We're going to discuss this in a minute and maybe demonstrate and show exactly what it looks like, or at least the size. The Isaron, The Isaron, well, here we have a vessel. This is approximately an Isaron. Let's say this blue one that I'm holding now. This is approximately the size of Isaron, from what I can determine. And this Isaron over here, this size over here is the minimal size for a mincha offering, the amount of flour that fits into this. It could be fit in, it could be filled to the top, overflowing. This is the mincha, the minimal mincha of any Isaron. The minchas chavisin, the chavise kohen gadol, which the kohen gadol brought every day, half in the morning, half at night, was brought in the morning with half of an Isaron, and the evening with half of an Isaron. And this is because the Torah wants the Kohen Gadol to bring a mincha that'll be constant, just like the Olas Tamid, the carbon Tamid, which is brought one in the morning, one at night. Similarly, the mincha of the Kohen Gadol is brought in the morning and at night, and it splits so as to be brought part in the morning, part at night, so that it's seemingly constantly brought. It's like a constant mincha. The Torah calls it mincha tamid. So that's a half a mincha, but only a half in the morning and a half in the night, such that altogether it adds up to one Isaron. Half an Isaron in the morning, half an Isaron in the evening. It's an interesting argument between the Rishonim as to how exactly this is divided. For the Gemara, it sounds like the Kohen simply takes the flour, divides it into two, pours one half into a half Isaron container, and another half into another half Isaron container, and then, you know, sets one aside for the evening, one for the morning, and prepares the mincha with each one separately. The Rambam says it's not done like that. Rather, the mincha is prepared with an entire Isaron, just like all the other menachos. It's baked into breads, 12 breads. Afterwards, the Kohen cuts through the 12 breads. He cuts through them, and half of each bread he uses in the morning, and half of each bread he uses in the evening. Okay, let's get on to the preparation of the mincha. What do we need to prepare a mincha? Well, first thing we're going to need is a kli. We're going to need a measuring utensil. The Mishnah tells us in Zvachim Peches, Mishnah Menachos discusses this, it says that there are midos yavesh, two midos yavesh, and there are a number of clay halach that were used in the Mikdash. The two midos yavesh were an isaron. Again, that's the size which an isaron of flour can fit into, and a chatzi isaron, which is half that size. The purpose of the chatzi isaron is, as we said, to divide up the minchas chavisin. The chavisin kohen gadol is divided, and half is put into one chatzi isaron, and then the other half is put into the chatzi isaron, and that's how that mincha is prepared. Well, the others are prepared with an isaron. Now, does that mean every mincha uses an isaron of flour? Is that what it means? So we say, no, it doesn't necessarily mean that every mincha uses an isaron of flour. Rather, the amount of flour varies. There are a number of them that do use an isaron. A good number of the menachos do use an isaron. However, there are those that vary depending on which animal is brought. And notably, the minchas nesachim, which is brought with every carbon, varies depending on which type of carbon is brought. I'm sorry, not brought with every carbon, it's brought with every carbon ayla and carbon shlamim and carbon taida. It varies depending on what animal the carbon is. If the animal is a keves, one isaron is brought. If the animal is an ayl, two isaronis. If it's a par, three isaronis. The bigger the animal, the more mincha is used. However, does that mean that there was another kli to measure two isaronos? No, everything was done with a single isaron. It was done with a single isaron, and if it had to be filled up twice, it was filled up twice, rather than taking a larger kli. This way, when you fill it up heaping, you get two heaping measures into the mincha, whereas if you'd have a kli now is made to fit two isaronos, it would only have one heaping measure for the entire kli, according to one explanation in the Gemara in Zvachim. That's the kli that we start with. Now, that's the midas hayavesh, meaning the measuring utensil for the dry measure. Besides that, you also take a kli halach. Kli halach, there are a number of different kli halach. the Mishnah lists a hin and chatzi and revias hin and shlish hin and a lug, chatzi lug, and revias a lug. So you have seven different midos halach, the liquid measures. The liquid measures varied. The liquid measures, the biggest of the liquid measures was a hin, which is 12 lug. One lug is approximately this size, from my measurements. One lug is approximately this size. And the measuring utensil of a hin would be large enough to hold 12 of these, whereas the measuring utensil of a half hin would be 6 of these, a quarter hin would be, a third hin would be 4 of these, a quarter hin 3 of these, and finally then you have the single lug measure, a half lug measure, and a quarter lug measure. These were divided up. Of course, the liquid measures don't really run over, so it doesn't make a difference. You might as well have a 12 lug measure, so you just fill it up once instead of filling up the single one 12 times, which will come out to the same amount. So the Mishnah says that there are these seven midos halach, and you have the two midos hayavesh, which were used in the preparation of menachas, among other things. What other things, for instance, did we use the liquid measures for? The dry measures were basically just for that purpose, for the preparation of the flour of the menachas. What other things were the liquid measures used for? Well, one important item is Hanukkah's coming up. The lighting of the menorah was done with oil. It would take pure olive oil, Shemen Zayas Kosis Lamar, Shemen Zayas of the best quality, which we'll discuss soon, and they would fill up a container which would have enough oil for lighting all of the seven candles, which was approximately a liter. It was about this size basically, and they fill it up and seal it, and they put it aside so that they could take it out and use it to light the candles in the morning, in the evening, when they lit the candles of the menorah. These were filled up with olive oil and sealed. They were divided then into the seven different cups of the menorah. The menorah had seven cups for seven flames. And he'd take this, which would hold 3.5 lug, pour a half a lug into each one of the seven cups. And of course, before they'd fill this up, they'd measure the or when they're pouring out the half a lug, they pour it into a half a lug container, and then they pour from there into each of the neiros of the menorah, each of the cups of the menorah. And that was what the half lug container was used for in the mikdash. It was used to fill it up so that you could pour a half lug into each one of the containers of the menorah. What's the purpose why was the midah of a half a lug chosen? Because that was enough to burn for the longest of nights. When you have a long night, like the nights of Teves around Hanukkah time, then it would burn all night long. The half a lug was enough to sufficient to burn all night long, and that's why they placed that amount. Even in the short nights, such as Tammuz, they would still use the same half a lug, and it would burn into the morning. Basically, when it says that they found in the Mikdash one container of oil that was still sealed with the seal of the Kohen Gadol, it was basically something like this that had a seal on it. How did I measure these containers? The rule is that everything could be measured down to eggs. The egg size is the basic measure for the volume measures. Eggs, we know what an egg looks like. So an egg is basically 50 cc, which is how many ounces? Tell you in a minute. But it's basically 50 cubic centimeters of volume. And if you want to figure out how many cubic centimeters there are to a lug, well, we know that there are 6 beitzim in the lug. 6 beitzim in the lug. So 6 times 50 cc, it gives you 300 cubic centimeters. And if you have a vessel containing 3.5 lugs to be used for the menorah, it's 3.5 times 300 cc, which is a liter and 50 cubic centimeters of oil. The isarin for measuring the flour was also based on the size of an egg. It's also based on the size of an egg. So the isarin that we discuss is the same amount from which the Torah tells us we must separate challah when we are baking. And the Menachos and the Mikdash, obviously, you didn't have challah separated from it, which is taking out a little portion and giving it to a kohen, because the whole mincha was kodesh. However, when we bake ourselves a challah, if we use approximately this amount of challah, of the flour, perhaps a drop more, then we separate a handful of the dough, and we put it aside and burn it or throw it out. In the times of the Beis HaMikdash, when we were tar and we could prepare dough that was tar and the kohanim were tar, we'd give it to a kohen and the kohen would eat it. The isaron is the size for which we are obligated to separate challah. It's the size of the isas midbar. It's the size of the omer. It says the omer asiris ha'efahu. That's the isaron. And the isaron then would come out too. The isaron then, if you calculate with the eggs, it would be 43 and a fifth eggs, which would make it closer to 2 liters, a bit more than 2 liters. However, a liter is a measure of... Okay, a liter is... Yeah, but... Okay, I'm sorry, here we have the calculation. The 50 cubic centimeters is 1.7 ounces. 1.7 ounces, okay, so that's the size of a beit, so 1.7 ounces. So if you multiply that by 43 and a fifth, it'll be more than 2 liters. However, the liter is a weight measure of a cubic centimeter of water. And the isaron is a dry measure, a volume measure. And since the flour weighs less, you have to take off a certain amount, about a third of the total volume. You come out with approximately 1.4 liters would be then a isaron of the flour. Okay, so we start with the kalim. It's interesting, 1.4 liters is about 3 pints, is that what it says? 3 pints. 3 pints. Okay. The Mishnah, interestingly, refers to midos hayavesh and clay halach, measuring tools for dry measures, and vessels for containing liquid. And the Rishonim asked, why didn't it just say kalim, vessels for dry or wet? Why does it have to call one midos, meaning measuring one, measuring utensils? Rashi says that the midos hayavesh were truly midos, meaning they were only used for measuring. The measuring tools for measuring out an isaron or half isaron were only used for measuring, for no other purpose. The only thing they were used for was for measuring, for the flour, for one full isaron and a half an isaron. Whereas the liquid measures, the kalim that are used for liquid measure, were sometimes used for dry products as well, and they're used for other purposes besides measuring. For instance, you would mix together the dough inside of a container that could contain liquid. And it wasn't made exclusively for measuring. That's why it's not called midos. That's what Rashi says. Tosfos says it's because the dry measures were able to be used for measuring, since you could pile up the measure and could fill up the kli until it's entirely full and it's overfilled until it contains as much as it possibly could. And that's a way of measuring the contents, because you could fill it until it makes a mound on top of the kli. Or else you could make it perfectly flat. A liquid measure, you can't make it perfectly flat. You can't fill it all the way up, because the properties of the oil and the water allow it to pop up a drop above the level of the rim of the vessel. However, it doesn't really make a mound, and you can't really smooth that off. So it's called rather simply a vessel rather than a measuring tool. Okay, that's the vessels that you're using. Another thing that we're taking, obviously, is going to be flour, and we're going to be taking oil. Now, the flour, which I have over here, some flour, the flour is very finely ground, and it's brought from the best flour in Israel. The best flour in Israel, the Mishnah tells us, was acquired from certain places that the Mishnah tells us had very fine flour. If this is Yerushalayim, here you see the Dead Sea and the Sea of the Galilee and the Mediterranean. Here's Jerusalem over here. It says Michmas umzunicha alfala solas, the best place to find solas, flour, fine flour, is in Michmas, which is near Jericho, in that area, to the northeast of Jerusalem, so near Beitel, that area. Then the Zanoach, which is another place that had fine flour, was on the way from Beit Gubrin near Beit Shemesh, heading towards Yerushalayim. Then it says that if they couldn't get from there, the second best would be to get from Ophraim, Bebika, an area near Beit She'an, which had which was known for its abundant flour. It talks about the oil as well. The oil was also taken from the most qualified places. The two places that it mentions were Tekoa, Alpha Lashemen. Tekoa is up here, all the way near Tzfat. In fact, it's on a mountain directly across from Meron, according to the different records that we have in the historical books that were written 2,000 years ago and describe the area. It seems that it was in an area over there, right across from Meron. And that was in Shevet Nachlas Shevet Asher. Parsha says that Yaakov Vinu blessed Asher, may Asher Shemein Alachmo, V'yitin Madani Melech, that there's a lot of oil and good oil in the area that was given to Asher, which was in the north of Eretz Yisrael. And because of that, Chazal say there were very wise people that lived in that area. The Isha HaTekoes, the woman who Yoav brought in to save the David's son, to convince David to invite his son back to Yerushalayim, was the Isha Tekoes, the Isha from Tekoa. And that's because Chazal said Tekoa was the place where the olive oil came from, so therefore people over there are very wise, because one who drinks olive oil becomes wise, that's what it says. And that's of course related to the Chanukah miracle, where we see that the miracle of Chanukah was expressed in terms of oil. The oil burned longer as a way of demonstrating that the wisdom of the Torah is greater than the wisdom of the Greeks. The Greeks were proud of their wisdom, and they were trying to impress it on the Jews and say, this is what culture should be, this is the way to grow, this is wisdom. And when we overcame them, Hashem showed the nes in the oil of the menorah to show that the wisdom of the Jews outdoes that of the Greeks. In fact, there's another interesting point relating to the Chanukah miracle that is related to Tekoa, and that is, we know that the miracle was 8 days. Why did the miracle last 8 days? Why did the oil burn for 8 days, not 7 days, not 12 days, not 15 days? Why was it that it had to burn for 8 days? The reason that is given by the Gaonim, an early source, is because it would take 8 days to produce new olive oil. And therefore, the miracle was that the oil that was found in the Mikdash burned for 8 days, so that they had enough time to bring new olive oil. Why was it that it took 8 days to obtain new olive oil? Say the Gaon, because the new olive oil was brought from Tekoa, all the way up here. It's a 4-day journey from Jerusalem. To go there, it takes 4 days there, 4 days back. It'll take 8 days. The 8-day miracle was giving them enough time to bring new oil from Tekoa to fill the menorah. Okay, so we have the oil, we have the flour. The oil, of course, has to be olive oil. You can't use any other oils, peanut oil or sesame oil or any of the other oils, cottonseed oil. You have to use olive oil. Not only that, the olive oil could be made in different ways. And it's a hiddur, meaning the best way is to bring the fanciest oil for your mincha. However, you don't have to. Let me explain that. There are three basic times that you reap your harvest from your olive tree, or your field of olive trees. There's the first stage, when the olives on the top of the tree become ripe, the middle stage, when the olives lower down become ripe, and then the final stage, where the last olives, the stragglers, become ripe. From each of these stages, the earlier stage is considered higher quality olive oil. The oil that comes from the olives on the top of the tree are considered somewhat higher quality than those that come from the olives in the middle of the tree, and certainly from those that come from the straggling olives that become ripe last. That's the first thing to know. Now there's another factor that determines the quality of the olive oil, and that is how much work was put in to squeezing this oil out of the olives. If you just squeeze it in these, they took woven baskets that were woven from lulav leaves and pressed the olives in those. When you press the olives in those, the oil seeps out and the basket drains the oil, separating the pieces of olive from the oil. The oil that comes out then is the highest quality oil. If after you finish with that, then you press it with a heavy beam. You rest a heavy beam on them in order to forcefully squeeze out any other oil that could come out. The first oil sort of drips out of the basket. The second type of oil is pressed out with the heavy beams. That's the second quality, slightly lower quality. And the third type is created by grinding the leftover olives and the olive stones, and that'll produce also some more oil from whatever's left in the olive, and then you strain out the pieces and you're left with olive oil. Again, the first type is the higher quality, second is the second most quality, the third is the third. We have a graphic up of that on the site. It may not be available now, we're going to have to put it up afterwards. In any case, those are the different stages of the olive oil producing process. If you could get from the first type of olive, the ones that ripen on top of the tree, they ripen first, and you could use the finest type of olive oil, that's certainly the best. But if you can't, you could even use the worst type of olive oil and the worst type of olives, whatever you can. That's the din as far as the mincha is concerned. However, if you're taking olive oil in order to make in order to light the menorah, then you have to use the only the olive oil that drips out of the basket. You cannot use the olive oil that is created by pounding the olives or weighing the heavy beam on them, or the olive oil that's made by grinding the olives. You can only use the olive oil that's made by letting the olive oil drip from the baskets. You could use the ones from the top of the tree, the olives from the middle of the tree, the bottom of the tree, but it has to be the first olive oil. That's called Shemen Zayis Zoch. Okay, so for the mincha, we take any olive oil, and as well we take flour. The flour is also prepared in a specific way. There's something that's referred to, we'll have a picture of this up also, it's referred to as shifa and be'ita, rubbing the kernels of the wheat and punching the kernels of wheat. What we want to do is we want to remove all the husks, all the chaff, all the parts of the wheat that aren't going to produce the edible flour itself, so that we have pure white flour. And we don't have mixed into it any of the klipot, any of the rinds, any of those pieces, the coverings of the wheat kernel. To get the natural coverings off, the outer covering is easy to get off, where you simply winnow and you throw it up to the wind and it comes off. But to get the other ones off, you have to the other ones are much closer to the kernel itself. They're sort of like a clothing that the kernel is wearing. This is the suvin and mursan they're referred to as. To get them off, you have to loosen them first by putting them in a rechaim shel grusos, a bean mill. And this isn't a fine grinder that's going to grind the kernels hard, but it's sort of a grinder which has the top and bottom stones separated by a little bit so that they gently grind the kernels, so that they don't actually cut the kernels into pieces, but they loosen the outer layers of the kernels. And then afterwards, you could remove the outer layers. Where's the book with the pictures? Oh, here we are. Afterwards, you can remove the outer layers with the sieves. You use sieves to separate the outer layers. This is how you do what's called shifa and be'ita. Shifa is rubbing with the hands, as you see over here, on the kernels. Be'ita is punching them. And then, afterwards, you mill them in this loose mill. And that, these different processes loosen the suvin and mursa, and these different processes loosen the outer layers, so that we could remove the outer layers and remain with the pure kernels. Okay, that's preparing the flour. Now, another ingredient is water. Water that is used for the menachas, according to the Mishnah, is called menachas niloshes peposhrin. You use warm water for the menachas. Warm water is used in order to knead the menachas. It never says anywhere how much water to put in. Apparently you put in enough so that you can make a dough out of it. Okay. Now, when we sift the flour, how do we sift it? Well, it depends. It says in the Mishnah that there are certain karbonos that are, in which the flour is sifted a specific amount of times. The omer is sifted 13 times, te'alechem 12 times, lechem panim 11 times. What's it mean 11 to 13 times? So you have 13 sets of sifters. You have a thick sifter, a thin sifter, altogether 13, and you go from one into the next, and then again into one into the next, and again a thick and a thin, a thick and a thin, thick and a thin. And that way, you manage to separate all of the chaff from it. The shtei lechem and the omer were brought from very, very fresh wheat. It was the first, wheat and barley, it was the first product of the year. And in order to separate the bran, it was important to do a lot of siftings. However, the other karbanos were, the other menachos were brought from regular wheat, wheat that's been in the market, and it wasn't necessary to sift them so many times. The lechem apanim was sifted 11 times. However, if a person brought a mincha of his own, when he's bringing a mincha, right, he's bringing a mincha of his own, a private mincha, right, the public ones we said were the oimer, the shtei lechem, lechem apanim. They were prepared with sifters. When a person brings a private mincha offering, however, he doesn't use the sifters. Instead, he buys from the market finely sifted flour. The best way to get finely sifted flour is to go to the marketplace and ask for finely sifted flour. Because over there you have professionals that specialize in sifting, and they know how to sift with fine sieves. If you buy from them, you know that you have it sifted properly. The public offerings, such as the lechem apanim, which is brought every week, were prepared in the mikdash. The sifting was done in the mikdash as a special kula they had, because the Torah chosal mamonim shal Yisrael, the Torah had rachmanis and said, if you're going to go out and buy finely sifted flour, it's going to cost much too much. Why don't you sift it yourself? If you sift it with 11 sifters, then we say it's considered sifted fine enough. However, if you're bringing a private offering, you have to spend the money and bring finely sifted flour from the shuk. Okay, when we're going to prepare the mincha offering now, we have to be careful, just like we're careful when we're preparing matzahs on Pesach. And the reason for this is because, just like there's an isser of allowing the dough to become chametz on Pesach, there's also an isser of allowing the dough to become chametz in the mincha. Not only do we say that you may not allow the dough to become chametz while preparing the mincha, even after you give the mincha to a kohen, and the kohen is ready to eat it, he has to be careful not to allow it to become chametz. It has to be baked quickly. Now, that doesn't mean that they all look like the matzahs that we eat on Pesach. In fact, even in the matzahs we eat on Pesach have quite a variety. The tamanim eat thick matzahs that you could bend, and they're still matzahs, they're not chametz, because they didn't rise. When dough rises, it becomes chametz. If you bake it immediately, through and through, it won't rise, and it's not going to become chametz. So, for instance, over here, we made an experiment and tried to bake some mincha-type cakes. And here, these are pretty thick, but I don't think they rose. This is basically the size that I put them into in cupcake tins. And as you see, if the inside is also baked, it's baked through and through, and it's very oily dough because of the oil that we put into the mincha, but it didn't rise. And this is the way that the menachos were brought. They're probably a bit thinner than mine, but they were made like loaves. Some of them were also made into thin matzahs, but many of them, most of them were made into loaves. And they still were not allowed to become chametz. When the mincha offering is made, right, they're divided, the flour was taken as a whole and divided into 10 chalas. It's divided into 10 chalas. It's actually a machlokas in the Mishnah, exactly how many. We know for sure that the mincha chavisei kohen gadol and the mincha and the lechem aponim consisted of 12 chalas, not 10. We also know for sure that the lachmei toda and the lachmei nazir, which I didn't mention earlier, the loaves that were brought with the carbon toda and the loaves that were brought by a nazir, were 10 loaves that we know from the Torah. The reason I didn't mention those earlier is because those aren't really menachos. The Rambam in his introduction tells us that we see that these aren't offered at all on the Mizbeach, not even a piece of them is offered on the Mizbeach, then they're not even touched to the Mizbeach, like all other minchas are brought to be touched to the Mizbeach, or almost all other minchas. And they also are eaten by everybody, not only by Kohanim. It's not like a mincha which is kachi kachim. And also, if a Kohen brings Lachmei Todo, or a Kohen brings Lachmei Nazir, he's allowed to eat it, whereas if a Kohen brings a mincha, it must be burned. The entire mincha is burned. Those are not true menachas, that's why I didn't count them in my listing of menachas. However, those are brought as 10 challahs. What about the other menachas? So someone donates a mincha, does he divide it into 10 challahs, into 12 challahs? Here's a machlokas in the Mishnah, we rule, divides it into 10 challahs, that's at least how the Rambam rules. So, I have 10 over here, and the 10 of them are baked together in a single pot. So we're going to make a dough, when we make the mincha, and we want to divide it up into 10 different portions, so we could bake it in a large oven, which will contain all 10 of them, or a large pot, which can contain all 10 of them. The pots are named Marcheshes and Machavas, and we'll have pictures of them also up. Meanwhile, here you can see the picture. I don't know how well this comes out, but here you can see the picture on the video. This would be a machvas, where you see it has 10 different loaves sitting on it, on these bumps. And then the marcheshes is very similar, but in this picture it has 10 different wells for placing the flour of the dough of the mincha, and that's what baked the marcheshes offering. Okay. Let's see. Now, when we go on to make the dough, again we have to do this very quickly because we want to be careful not to allow it to become chametz. Now, there are different types of menachos, and the main difference between them would be an important category is the difference between the menachos from which the portion is given to the mizbeach before it is baked, and menachos from which a portion is given to the mizbeach after it is baked. The portion given to the mizbeach is referred to as is usually the portion of kmitza, usually. In some menachos, the entire mincha is brought onto the mizbeach, but in most of them, part of the mincha is eaten and part is brought on the mizbeach. The way of separating the parts is called kmitza. And the kmitza process could be done with flour, or it could be done with an actual baked cookie, a baked challah, which we'll see. The challah is first crumbled beforehand, and then the kmitza is done. Now, when they start making the mincha, when you start making the mincha, you measure out the different items that you're going to be using. We would start with the oil. Starting with the oil, we'll fill up something approximately the size of a lug with oil. And this is going to be used in a number of different steps. We don't just pour in the oil all at once. Truth is that the oil is still not enough to knead the dough with, because the water is going to have to be added also. The kli is supposed to be filled to the top. I'm sorry, it's a question. How much? Speak up. How much is a lug? A lug, we said, was 6 beitzim. Each beitz is 1.7 ounces, so it would be like 10 ounces, 10 point something ounces. So, this is, I'd say approximately, is that right? Is that what we said? 1.7 and 6, 10.2 ounces. I'd say something like that. I don't know. I think it should, in cubic centimeters, it should be 300 cubic centimeters, which is about a third of a liter. Now, when using this, we have to fill the kli up all the way to the top, because this would in the mikdash would be a holy vessel, a kli shares, and when we put the oil inside of it, we fill it to the top, and the oil will become kadosh. 11.6 ounces, okay, 11.6 ounces, approximately. So this would be filled to the top, and the isaron of flour would be filled to the top. So let's say if this is the isaron, so we'd fill this blue vessel up, which I'm going to use. Well, okay. Maybe some could. Okay. So this will be filled to the top. Now, we have to make sure that we keep water out. We don't want this to become chamish, and that when we put in the water and when we start kneading, we do the rest of the process rather quickly. So this will be filled to the top like this. And now, we start first with putting in oil, but only a portion of it. We'll put in, let's say, a third approximately. Now, we put in the flour. All the flour goes in at once. And then, we look at the clock, and we gotta start kneading, mixing it together. Before we start kneading, really, we pour the oil on top. The oil first we poured on bottom, now we pour some more oil on top. And we leave some over for afterwards, because we're going to use the oil in one more step still. Okay, now we knead this together. This is very, very thick. I'm sorry, very, very floury. And we're going to need some water. Maybe someone could give me a cup of water. Again, the water that we use would be poshrim, warm water. Now, I put in oil, but not every mincha requires oil. There are two menachas which do not require oil, and if one uses oil, it would invalidate the mincha. You can fill the cup up. It would invalidate the mincha if we use oil. Those are the mincha sota and the mincha of the mincha sota and the minchas chote, which are done without oil. The reason the mincha sota is done without oil is, like I said, because we want to give her something that looks like animal food. And the reason the mincha chote is done without oil is for a similar reason, because he sinned. And we don't want to make fancy bread for a sin offering. A sin offering has to reflect the fact that it's coming to atone for a sin. I'm putting a little bit of water here. Okay. Now, as I said, sometimes the minchas are baked first, and after it's baked, then we do what's called kamitza, separating a portion for putting on the mizbeach. Until that process, until the kmitza process, a dzar, a non-kohen, is permitted to perform the avodah. It's not required for a kohen to perform the avodah until you reach the kmitza stage. All the stages before that may be done by a non-kohen, which is basically the stages that I'm doing right now. When no oil is added, then obviously we put in water, otherwise it would be impossible to knead it. For the mincha sota, at least we put in water. There is a mincha that is performed with only oil, that's the minchas nesachim, where we don't use water at all, at least according to some opinions, or certainly the chadchila, we don't put in water at all. The Rambam, from the Rambam it sounds like the minchas chote and minchas sota not only contain no flour, no oil, but they also contain no water, lechadchila. But you're allowed to put in water. If they're not going to contain water or oil, then they're simply flour offerings, exactly like it sounds, without any dough involved. Now, what we'd be doing here is, let's say, minchas solis. Minchas solis is one of the voluntary offerings, and this is done. In the mincha soles, the kmitza is done before the baking process. As I said, for the other baked, there are other baked menachas for which the kmitza, or the portion that's separated by the kohen for the mizbeach, is separated after baking. For the minchas solas, it's separated before baking. Again, when I'm preparing the dough, the Gemara says that there was also shifa and be'ita. Shifa again means rubbing like this, and be'ita means pounding like this. In the conclusion of the Gemara, it didn't have to have 300 rubbings and 500 poundings. It could have any odd number, unlike the preparation of the wheat kernels, which was done with a specific number, 300 rubbings and 500 poundings. However, the dough was just pounded and rubbed as necessary. Okay, it certainly has enough water, and it's beginning to look like a dough. Now, in the Minchas Solas, let's try to get this into one cohesive dough. The kmitza is going to be done from the entire dough as a whole, but the Rashi says that afterwards, after the kmitza, when the kohen bake it and make it into bread for themselves or matzah for themselves. Could use a little more water, maybe. Not here. When the kohanim bake it, then they would divide it up into 10 loaves, just like the other menachas. And it would be baked into 10 loaves, even though the kmitza was done before it turns into loaves. Okay. Now again, we have to rush this. The kohen has to be careful to stick it into the oven as soon as they do the kmitza, because even though the kmitza is done before it's baked, you have to make sure it doesn't turn into chametz. So after the kmitza, I assume the first thing they do is whisk it away and take it to be baked. And at night, all the menachas were divided up, and at night they're divided up, and they were given to all the people that worked in the mikdash at the time, the Anshe Mishmor, the Anshe Beisav, depending, we wrote insights about whether it's given to all the people of the Mishmor, of the Beisav, Mishmor of the people that work during the entire week, the Beisav of the people that work on that day. Okay, now, if we'd be eating this, we're going to have to take off challah, and the mincha, they wouldn't take off challah, but in any case, for this year we take it for that, a bracha. There's interesting argument in general about the size of shiurim. I did say that a beitza is 50 centimeters, cubic centimeters, which is the size of our eggs. And you could take a look in your refrigerator, you'll see right away. The Chazon Ish says that the size of the egg today is half the size the eggs used to be, and therefore all the shiurim, all the measurements that are listed in the Gemara, should be made from a double the size of our eggs. And according to him, the sizes were much bigger. In general, the Acharonim agree that historically, there isn't a strong basis for that opinion. It isn't the Chazon Ish's own opinion, he's taking it from earlier sources, but he just pointed out that it's an opinion that should be taken into consideration when making brachas, etc. When separating challah also, if you want to make a bracha on the challah, sometimes some people are annoyed to take off challah with a bracha only from a bigger share. Alright, here, let me take off something just in case someone wants to eat this afterwards. Let's say that this is challah, I'll take it for that a bracha. Put it aside. In any case, now, what you do afterwards is, there's a book with the pictures. Oh, let me have the book there. Okay. Now, the kmitza, of course, is done only by a kohen, and not by a non-kohen. what has to be done now, what we have to do is before the kmitza, is first pouring on the remaining oil. We pour that on. There are certain places where you end up with more oil than others. Perhaps I should have put more oil into the original recipe and less for afterwards. So here, you pour on some more oil. It's covered with oil now. Then, in the mikdash, they took what's called lavona. Lavona, frankincense, is... right, lavona is frankincense? That's some type of material that's taken out of the sap of a tree and made into crystals, and the crystals of frankincense, which would look somewhat like sugar, were now sprinkled on the mincha. Okay? The mincha would then be brought in the vessel. This vessel would be called a bisa. A bisa is like a big mixing bowl. And this would also be a kli kodesh in general, although it didn't have to be. The entire bisa with the offering was taken to the mizbeach and placed, not on the mizbeach, but touched to the corner of the mizbeach. It would be touched to the corner of the mizbeach. Which corner? The corner that was close to the door of the heichal and close to the ramp, meaning the southwest corner. And it would be touched to the to the mizbeach, and then the kohen would bring it back and would perform kmitza. Some say that the reason for touching to the mizbeach is so that the entire mincha should be an offering, should be brought to the mizbeach, even though part of it is being eaten and only part is putting on the fires. This, in this manner, even the other part also is associated with the mizbeach. Now comes the kmitza. The kmitza was done, according to Rashi, with three fingers. What we're going to do is put the hands in, like this, hands into the mincha, and then to take off three fingers worth. The Rambam doesn't mention three fingers. From the Rambam, it seems like four fingers were used. In fact, it seems from the Rambam as though the hand was pushed on top of the mincha such that the dough and the flour would go into the hand, rather than first putting in a hand open and then closing it. There are different sources that talk about whether it's three fingers or four fingers. It doesn't say clearly anywhere four fingers, but there are certain sources that don't mention three fingers and therefore sound like it was done with an entire hand. Again, the kmitza was done by taking the mincha and cupping it in the hand. It has to be done with the right hand, not the left hand. The right hand, because all the avodah is done with the right hand, it has to be done by a kohen. So, let's see. You can't do it like this. You can't do it like this. It has to be done such that the hand cups the mincha against the hand by extending the fingers onto the hand, not too much and not too little, and simply by putting the hand in and taking it. Now, for example, we tried like this. Oh, not easy with a dough. They take three fingers. And then, we want it to be exactly three fingers worth, and the bottom finger would be used to break off the part that's sticking on bottom, and the top finger, the thumb, would be used to break off the top that sticks out on top. You have to make sure not to take off too much or too little, because then the comments won't be full, won't be exact. This is very hard. In fact, the Gemara says, this is from the Avodas Kashrus Shemimikdash. Now, the simple thing would be for me to use my other hand and just even it out. Whereas we wrote in the inside, so you have to do everything with the right hand. This is considered part of the kmitza, separating the top and the bottom. And therefore, you have to make sure to do it all with the right hand, making it very complicated. And you can't have any sticking out over here either. If this would be just flour, it'd be much easier. So in the flour offering, such as minchas chote, minchas sote, it's relatively easy. A dough offering is also not so hard until you see what we do with the baked offerings. Now, that's really complicated. Anyhow, we have the kmitza. The kohen would take it to the top of the mizbeach, pour on the salt from the mizbeach on the top of the ramp there, salt, and he would take this and throw it into the fire of the mizbeach, if it would be a kmitza. The place that you put the hand into is the place where you see the most oil. Makom shenis rav shamna. Now, the way the Rambam says it, it sounds like you press your hand in after it's already closed, and it's somehow supposed to go into your hand. I don't see that could really be done so easily. Well, I guess I could have to leave a little space over there also by the fingers maybe, but that's not really the way to do it. It has to go in from the bottom. It has to go in from the bottom, and that's, I suppose it could be done if you keep pressing until you fill it up. Okay. We're almost finished. In any case, the Rambam says that's done very simply with four fingers, in which case, if you could open your hand and then close it, then it's very simple. In fact, the Kesef Mishnah writes that the Rambam holds it wasn't one of the complicated avodas of the Mikdash at all. The baked ones, here's our baked sample of mincha. If this would be a mincha, I wouldn't let it become chametz. Here are the baked ones. These baked ones over here, what's done in preparation of the baked menachas is what's called pesisa, pesisa, and before kamitza. The pesisa is done by breaking, is performed in order to break it into little pieces so that it should be possible to perform kamitza. How do you do kamitza on this? You already have 12 baked cakes or matzahs or whatever. What you do is you take it, you break it in half, or you don't even break it, you fold it in half. This time it broke because it's already been baked a while ago, so maybe it's more brittle. But then you fold it in half again, and according to, and you perform the same with all of the with all of the different loaves. And according to some, you continue to break it into half until each piece is the size of a zayas.